All right, welcome everyone. Today we're joined by Alan Gulley from Auburn University's RFID lab. Alan Gulley has experience on numerous industry projects around the retail and apparel space. He's currently the lead of the CHIP project. CHIP stands for Chain Integration Pilot, where they're building a proof of concept using blockchain for serialized data exchange between retail supply chain stakeholders. So I'm going to now pass this on to Alan. And Alan, if you want to go ahead and add additional information about yourself or your project before you get started, by all means, please do.
Absolutely. Thanks, Marco. Like you mentioned, I'm with the Auburn University RFID Lab. We've been Hyperledger members since the beginning of this year, February. Before we jump into the details of the project itself, I was hoping to share a little bit more about the lab and maybe help explain why on earth we're engaged in all this in the first place. So, the lab itself is located at Auburn University. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's a public land grant university. It's about 2 hours west of Atlanta. So that is where we do a lot of our travel from, and that's where a lot of our partners are based. There's a few industries we work with primarily. The lab itself is about 40,000 square feet, so there's really a lot of room. We do a significant amount of testing. But one of the things that I want to note, and that'll come up a little bit later on in the presentation, is that we don't develop technology here. We are primarily focused on the business case and strategies for technical implementation for various industries. Retail apparel, consumer packaged goods are the primary industries that we serve, but that's evolving into more than just pure retail. Food and grocery and pharma are growing areas of interest because of the core competencies we have here at the lab. And there's a lot of activity in the aviation and aerospace side as well. So the lab itself is funded entirely by outside partners. So the companies that you see here, either board members or active participants in the projects that we operate, pretty heavy on the retail apparel footwear side. But there's a lot of technology solution providers that we work with as well that participate in the industry-wide projects that we operate. So I don't want to spend whole lot of time talking about RFID. There's one key idea that I want to kind of carry along throughout the rest of the conversation is that RFID is one way of many to assign a unique digital identity to a physical item. We spent a little bit of time talking about this 2 weeks ago, but there's several ways to do this. You can use QR codes, 2D data matrices, serialized barcodes. Those are all defined by GS1 standards in some way, shape, or form. And all those different data carriers trace back to an SG10. So that stands for Serialized Global Trade Identification Number. And that's really at the core of what we do. We're obviously partial to RFID, and there's plenty of benefits that we can talk about over optical scanning solutions like a QR code or a data matrix. But for all intents and purposes, really the core function that, that RFID serves in what we're doing. So, like I said, there's a couple different ways to do it. There's near range RFID and NFC technologies that are pretty effective. And what we've seen so far in specifically retail and apparel is that it is very practical for many of the supply chain problems that they've worked with. Just to give you a little bit of context, there's about 14 billion RFID tagged items out there in the retail apparel supply chain today. That number is growing very, very quickly. The technology on its own really got to start with Walmart pushing it upstream suppliers about 15 years ago. We're seeing a lot of similar activity in the blockchain space now. But what we've seen more recently is brands, suppliers are actually coming to it on their own. So that being said, there's a lot of RFID adoption in retail apparel specifically. And so that's kind of the consortium we've been operating within and the expertise and understanding that we have. So currently, like in most supply networks, there is not an excellent use of data, specifically this SG10 or this item level data that we're seeing RFID tech generate. High level business documentation, kind of on the north side of the graphic here, is making its way through traditional EDI networks. Every now and then you'll get some more granular information embedded in ASNs or POs, but more often than not, all the data that populates those documents are going to be generated by legacy systems. So even though a lot of these companies that we're working with have the capability of capturing and utilizing the RFID data, the SG10 level information, there really isn't an efficient or effective way for them to exchange that with their trade partners. Most EDI networks today are not constructed to support the volume and granularity of the data that a lot of these serialized systems generate. And so that has become a bit of a hurdle for companies that are looking to share that data in between different touch points throughout the supply chain. So when we kick this thing off, like I said at the beginning of the presentation, we're really focused on the business case proof of concepts or pilots are necessary to prove out various technologies, specifically the supply chain space. So these are really kind of the three primary pain points that we focused on when we were beginning these conversations and putting together the partners to begin the proof of concept about a year and a half ago. Counterfeiting is an issue for just about every industry out there. This $98 billion number is from 2017, and the rest of the values are as well. But that is specific to footwear, apparel, watches, and luxury goods. A little bit further down the supply chain, we get to this trade-off point where there's a significant amount of tension between a supplier and the retail partner. Claims are essentially just the result of disputes between retailers and their suppliers. That is a very, that's an age-old issue. That's something that has been a number one pain point for many of the companies we work with year after year. That is one of the first conversations that gets started when we start talking about new technology is, can it help with claims? Shrink, last but not least, is primarily a problem that retailers are going to encounter. That $13 billion number is essentially just unaccounted for inventory. That does not include theft on the retailer's books. And that number was derived from 66 of the top apparel retailers in the U.S. today. So we add all those together, that's a little bit less than 5% of total retail sales in 2017. The actual figure for that year was $3.63 trillion. Simple math kind of gives us an idea of exactly what pain points we're looking at and how big of a piece of the pie it really represents. So in one slide, this is what we're working on. As you see, once again, north side of the graphic, we're not messing with legacy systems. We're not trying to reconstruct EDI networks. We're kind of leaving those as they are right now. But what we're trying to put together is a network for all these different supply chain stakeholders to plug their item level serialized data into. It's not meant to be a competition to EDI network. It's really meant to complement some of the higher level business documentation that's being traded between partners right now. To give a little bit of background on a prior project that we operated here at the lab, we're all sending their serialized data and their legacy system data to us to analyze and compare. And we were essentially the middleman between all the different stakeholders. And it was our job to compile the data, to analyze it, and to actually figure out, are the shipments accurate? Is what is expected being received? And a whole host of other questions. But one of the most important things we learned from that project that ran about 2 years was that every single one of these stakeholders had a different way of communicating data. They were either sending it to us over FTP servers, they were asking us to host the EDI mailbox, they were sending us Excel files. It was just about as disparate as you can get. So we had 13 companies and 35 different data streams. And there was absolutely no chance that any of these stakeholders were going to be able to share that data with one another and derive any actionable insights from the data sets they're receiving from other partners. So to give you an idea of the actual participants in the CHIP project, we currently have three brands, two retailers, and one logistics provider. For the sake of PR, they opted, let me rephrase that. About half of the partners chose to identify. So one of the brands that's participating is PVH Corp. They're the parent conglomerate that owns brands like Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein, and Warner's. Another brand that's participating is Herman K. It's a smaller brand. They make outerwear for brands like London Fog and a few others. The retailers opted to remain anonymous for the time being, and the logistics provider did as well. But what we've done so far is essentially take these partners and we've grouped them off into channels. And we're building off of Fabric right now. We'll kind of get to that in a few minutes, but this is the way that we've kind of organized the network as of right now. There is a vertical brand that has manufacturing, distribution, and retail operations. And then there are two different channels that are going to contain traditional wholesale transactions. So this is going to be PVH, and this is going to be the Hermie K brand, and then their retail partners. Once again, the vertical brand has a few different supply chain nodes that we're going to be tracking that serialized data through. Wholesale brands and retailers have a little bit longer of a process to follow the products through, but we're going to be capturing the data all the way from manufacturing to the store, and we're in the process of finalizing all this right now. So this is a high-level overview of the way we've organized the channels within Fabric. One of the things that we don't want to see for too much longer is this AU logo, you know, in every single channel and primarily responsible for the ordering service. But for the sake of the proof of concept, our goal in the short term is to communicate to our partners, to our end users, that one, this is functional, and two, it's valuable to continue pursuing this and to look to take it to pilot and hopefully to production.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Would you consider working with Oakland University in Michigan?
Yeah, we're always open to new partnerships, and that's actually one of the questions I have at the end of this for the group is, you know, trying to find the right partnerships, because there are examples of solution providers really throwing their weight around in the space. And we've had a significant number of companies come to us since this project kicked off and asked if we could kind of help facilitate and organize all of this, because, you know, we're not really in it to develop IP and sell it to anyone. We're really just trying to make this thing work. So definitely open to partnership opportunities, especially with other universities, because this is a great opportunity for students to get in and to learn.
Okay, my name is Brett Carpenter, and I'm working with the Economic Development Corporation in Michigan. I'm being introduced to senators and congresswomen, and I just got an invite to Oakland University, and they have a great interest in this. So I don't want to speak for them, obviously, but anything that I can obtain from this specific SIG so that I can pass it along to him, because at this point, Professor Patel is basically asking me, when can we meet? Because he's really excited about the next steps.
Absolutely. And I plan to share a copy of this deck with the group afterwards. So we can definitely forward that resource to you, and you're welcome to share that around if that would be helpful for them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So to give everyone an overview of the steps that we've kind of taken so far, we really had to get an idea of how much serialized data was out there in the supply chain today. So whether that was at manufacturing, distribution, or the store level, we had to work with all those partners individually to get a feel for exactly where they had infrastructure installed. Another one of the issues that we encountered was how much control do each of these companies, each of these end users have over their own data. Some of the organizations have an internal team that's managing absolutely everything. There are others that are going to be outsourcing a lot of those responsibilities to third parties. And so right away, we had to make sure that we got all the proper people at the table so we could really make this thing work. So step one, finished that in March of this year. There's a timeline we can get in a minute. But step two, this is probably the least interesting part of what we've had to do, but it really is crucial for making the whole network operate in congruence. GS1 is one of the sponsors of this project. They're very involved and engaged with the work that we do here at the lab. And we talked earlier about the dissimilar data that all the different companies were contributing to a previous project. And so we understood right away how important it was to have a common standard adopted and required before data could be pushed onto the network itself. So One of the things that our team has done is they put together a piece of software, essentially just a very simple program that will ingest various forms of data from our partner companies and translate that into the EPCIS compliant output. That is a non-trivial task, and it was almost one that we had to generate, one that we had to perform out of necessity. But that has been kind of the linchpin that has held all this together and has enabled a lot of our partners to commit to the project, knowing that they weren't necessarily going to have to restructure all their systems to support a new standard. Last but not least, this is a step that we're currently in. We're having to take all these data streams and plug them into the chain itself. Like I mentioned before, there is a lot of things we do here at the lab, but developing and selling software is not one of them. Currently, once again, you can see there's one too many AU logos embedded in this stack. And our ultimate goal is not to continue to occupy these portions of the technology stack. We've had to develop a lot of the solutions right now out of necessity to show that the idea of blockchain and its functionality and supply chain use case is possible. So that is where we built in a lot of the ingestion points for the data itself, the translation through the client into the network. We are using IBM's blockchain platform here at the network layer to administer Fabric underneath and to provide the API endpoints for the different data feeds to actually make their way from the end users to the chain itself. But this is really one of the reasons we wanted to speak with this group and to share about this project, because this is the current state of the project. This will be concluding at the end of this year. Early 2020, we'll be kicking off the pilot stage where we really try to ramp up the scale of this project and prove out if it's applicable to the specific pain points that we talked about earlier that our group has been focused on thus far. So, in the future, we don't plan to occupy these selected portions of the technology stack, because our goal is not to own the data. Our goal is not to make ourselves indispensable. It really is to stand this up and to hand it over to our end users and to let them run with it. That being said, a lot of these companies need solution provider partners. They need tech vendors who can come in, understand the issues they have, and develop the software that they need to plug into this network to derive actionable value from the network and do so in a scalable way that exceeds what we're capable of doing on our own right now. So at this point, I really did want to open it up to the group to see if any of the members have suggestions, or if there are maybe solution providers on the call right now that would be interested in being engaged in what we're doing.
I have a statement about taxation. I perceive that taxation has changed immensely, and that in the context of providing this, that taxation should also be addressed. And I believe that it can be addressed with the chain code. With that said, everything is taxed up front. And so if you have an intra firm, one firm to the next, it used to be that they would tax at the end of it. But now there's a complexity. And so I'll hard stop right now, but that is of great interest to me, because I believe that the smart contract or the chain code is a tremendous solution for taxation in the new landscape.
And when you say taxation, do you mean in regards to maybe international goods, tariffs, or just kind of in the broader context of commerce?
Well, I would have to say intra firms from, let's say from where the resources are obtained to the staging facility, to the manufacturing plant, to the warehouse. Mm-hmm. If the company has set it up as an intra firm, where they have, you know, you have several different companies in a multi-firm organization, there's a taxable event that happens each time. And so not a lot of CPAs are aware of this specific dynamics. And this is why, this is one of the things that I have basically turned a lot of heads and of kind of creating a little bit of a wave. And so I think the chain codes are the solution for this. And I think that having the RFID chip embedded right into the transaction is exactly what the blockchain is good at with the timestamp. So did I go around the block to make my point, or was I able to get interest from you, or was I able to make myself understood?
Oh yes, no, I'm definitely following you. I think that one of the related concerns that we've had, not necessarily a concern, more of a kind of a future forward thought, is the type of visibility this would give to those inter-firm transactions, because most supply chains today operate on quantity accounting, and that is a very different system, and that that's going to ultimately result in different levels of financial ownership and responsibility and ultimately taxation for the different stakeholders that are involved in those transactions. So it definitely could revolutionize the way that we account for products and who owns them and where exactly the responsibility.
If we don't do it, there's going to be a huge mess at the court. That's essentially what we're doing. If we don't provide this solution, the endpoint is just going to be, attorneys making a lot of money at the end of business. And so I think it's our responsibility, since I myself have this perception, at least to move forward with it. And so with AU, maybe if a team could be formed, because I'm trying to form a team at Oakland University with, with tax, with accountants. So that's,
Understood. I definitely think that there's an opportunity to collaborate there. Immediately for the purpose of this project, we're not as concerned with the financial nature of the transactions of the goods. But if we zoom out a little bit, that definitely has some long-term implications.
Did somebody else have another question?
Yeah, hi. This is Gurdeep Kalra from Infosys. So at Infosys, we are talking to Indian income tax authorities. So we have implemented one project where how the people are taking exemption, and we are able to link it so that they can't take exemption. But it's that initiative of the taxation is actually coming from the regulatory authority. And then the way they want it, then we are designing solution for them. On the other side, yes, we can have other, if in the Hyperledger fabric itself, we can design some reusable component so that how the transaction can be taxed, and that'll be a good initiative.
Okay, thank you. Alan, did you have more to go over, or were you just pausing here?
I was pausing here because I feel like this was probably the best opportunity for thoughts or opinions to be shared. There's a couple more slides, but it's really just kind of an overview of the project and an announcement about that position paper that we'd like to share with the group. But definitely open to any more comments, suggestions, or potential connections related to the pilot phase of this project and the need for technology partners.
So this is excellent. Thanks. If we can see some demo or POC of this one, how this piece is working, this would be great to see that.
Absolutely. We've had a few conversations recently with other Hyperledger members on this topic specifically, and they had very similar questions about configurations and what exactly is going on under the hood. So if that's a conversation that this group or individuals in this group would be interested in having, you are more than welcome to reach out to me, because we're trying to grow the relationships that we have with this community in particular.
Thank you.
Hi, I have a question. This is Lisa Pike with Avery Dennison. I had a question about leveraging Hyperledger Fabric as the underlying blockchain infrastructure. Are you also doing similar projects for other blockchain architectures, or what is, and if not, what is the reason for choosing Hyperledger?
That's a great question. So we really began our evaluation of different solution architectures about a year and a half ago. So at the time, we knew that the number one concern that our partners had was confidentiality. We have a lot of competitors that are working together in some way, shape, or form here at the RFID lab. A great example would be Nike, Adidas, and Under Armour. You know, in the business world, they're constantly at each other's throats, but there are instances where they will cooperate to some degree on projects here at the lab. So confidentiality was the number one concern amongst these businesses. And so we realized right away that the best frameworks out there were going to fall underneath the Hyperledger frameworks. So we really looked hard at Sawtooth and at Fabric. At the end of the day, it was going to come down to which one had the most resources available, who we could get help from, because this was definitely a new venture for us. You know, we reached out to the Intel team and a few other organizations that were pushing Sawtooth and helping others build off of it. And we did the same thing with Fabric and with IBM. And at the end of the day, we were able to get more support from the IBM team. And so that's ultimately what led to the decision of Fabric. And we have considered moving into parallel pilots that would support, you know, private instances of Ethereum or Corda or Quorum, any of those really that have kind of sprung up since that initial evaluation we did. But currently we are most invested with Fabric.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions? So Alan, about your point, we can have folks reach out to you afterward in terms of finding more information, how to get involved.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there's only so much that we're able to share right away on a call like this, but we can definitely be a little more forthcoming with information on separate calls. But we have to kind of protect the confidentiality of our partners, and I'm sure many of you understand that. The slide that I have pulled up right now is just kind of a timeline of where we've been and where we're going. So the POC itself will be concluding at the end of this year. There will be a white paper published at the end of that that will kind of outline the details and you know, what worked and what did not. Obviously, those will be free resources available online. In the meantime, there is a position paper that we've been working on that kind of outlines our thinking and the learning so far. And kind of the need in general for retail and other industries that operate supply networks for blockchain. So this is a paper that hasn't been released quite yet, but if there's any interest at all, we would like to share that with this group in particular, just to get give a better idea of what exactly we're working on. And from the conversations I've been a part of, I think that regardless of what industry is kind of the topic of the day, there are a tremendous amount of similarities between the problems they're facing and the process flows. And so while this paper might be specific to retail, I definitely think some of the core concepts are applicable elsewhere.
Yeah, once it's released, I'd ask if you can just email the group saying where they can get it to view it and that it's been released.
Absolutely, we can definitely do that.
Thank you.
This is Jeff Stolman. I have a question. How do you handle the fact that the information requirements of different industries is different?
When you say information requirements, do you mean information required by legislation or different?
Just information. Well, it may be to meet regulatory requirements. It may be just to meet, practical business requirements. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you're selling a sweater, you need to know, you might want to know what size it is and maybe what mm-hmm. color it is. If you're shipping a pharmaceutical, you need to know not only you know, what the pharmaceutical is, what the size pill is, how many pills to a bottle, but how many bottles to a carton, how many cartons to a case. So it gets a little bit more complex when you're, you also might need to know expiration dates.
That's a great question. This is one of the benefits of kind of generalizing all the different data carriers and working solely with what we, with the term we use, SG10. So pharma is, most of the product, from what I understand, anyone on the call is more than welcome to correct me on this. Data matrices are one of the most common ways of serialization. You know, those are present on bottles themselves. Those are generally present on cases and pallets. Other industries, specifically direct-to-consumer products, are a lot more bullish on QR codes. And then there are organizations in food and beverage that are kind of using a blend of both. There's a number of food service companies we work with that also use the 2D data matrix. And so all those different data carriers are going to have, you know, subtle pros and cons. But as long as they're conforming to GS1 standards for their industry, we're able to interoperate between industries. Obviously, we really know the RFID and the NFC technologies best. But at the end of the day, as long as the data carrier can support the kind of the metadata that each of those items in that industry need, we can parse it, we can work with it. So, you know, to your question about a sweater, you really might not need to know a whole lot about it besides what size, what color it is. But in a more heavily regulated industry like pharmaceuticals, there needs to be a lot more information available and embedded within the data carrier. So, this is a very similar problem that we see in the aviation side. You know, Delta is working on a pilot project to RFID tag all the safety equipment on board, specifically the oxygen canisters, and encode information like expiration dates so that they can actually just keep better track of what they have, what they need, and when they need to replace things. So we're definitely used to leaner data in retail and apparel, simply because there's not quite as much that you know, a company like a Nike or a Calvin Klein has to do. But there definitely is an overlap here between how those different industries communicate data.
So are you just like having one field to dump the tag information, regardless of what type of a tag or code is being used? It's just a blank field. And you don't care what's embedded in that tag. You just put the whole tag, all the tag data in there.
That's correct. So the EPCIS standard is defined. It's published by GS1. And it's actually most widely adopted in the pharma space. But to your point, it doesn't ask for RFID tag. It asks for SG10. So it doesn't matter if I'm scanning a QR code or an NFC tag or an RFID tag. The raw data elements that are embedded within these different mediums are going to register in the system the exact same way. And additional data like where this tag was scanned and you know, where it's going from now and what step it is in its process, that EPCIS standard has support for all those things. So it's not really a matter of you know, can I get the data on there? It's, you know, how much data do I want to put on there?
Right, and since you showed the three basic business use cases, the largest of which was counterfeiting, which is of course a particular problem in pharma. So I'll just stick with that as an example. How do you actually detect a counterfeit if you have two products that have the same SG10? What do you do?
That's a great question, and this is one of the ways that RFID specifically is generally a better solution for anti-counterfeiting than things like QR codes or 2D data matrices. Because if it is an optical scanning solution, if there has to be, you know, a phone or a device or some sort of camera that reads the information, then that could very easily be reprinted. You know, it doesn't take much effort to duplicate a QR code. RFID tag is a little more complex because there's actually a microchip and then an antenna built into each one of these tags. Now they're very seamless. They're all over the place. We interact with them all the time. But duplicating a RFID tag is far more complicated because you have to invest in a significant amount of hardware and infrastructure just to be able to read the information on this tag. That being said, not only do you have to be able to read it, you have to buy additional equipment to write it. From what we've seen from a lot of the brands and suppliers we work with, now granted, this is, you know, mostly retail apparel, footwear. They have seen anti-counterfeiting efforts significantly increase their effectiveness when they transition over to a radio wave based method for serialization and item identification. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's good enough.
I would like to add to it with what our group is doing with the simulation modules. A team is now forming with ANSYS, an engineering simulation company out of Pennsylvania. We are Optus in Troy, Michigan, and so the actual RFID chip will also push data into the modules. And so I'll hard stop on that one.
And to give a better example, one brand in particular was using, I think they had 30 plus contract manufacturers they were working with to actually stitch together all the goods that they were moving. The counterfeiting, or I guess the anti-counterfeiting use case, was the most interesting to them because they would actually control the number of RFID tags that they sent to their suppliers. So for example, if you know one factory was supposed to produce 10,000 items, they would send that factory 10,000 tags to apply to those items. What they were able to do then was identify any items that they found in gray markets that did not have those RFID tags. Additionally, if there were tags that were not applied, then they could see those tags appear somewhere else as long as they had visibility into whatever trade relationship or whatever channel those goods eventually appeared in. So I hate to generalize it and to say it's all about visibility, but it kind of gave a very efficient and effective way for these brands to hold their manufacturing partners accountable, simply because they knew exactly what to expect, and they were able to identify what shouldn't be in existence and what shouldn't be available to consumers. Any other questions?
Do you have any more slides to go through, or is this it?
This is the last one. I will say I've got a few more stacked through here, but they're really just very high level overview of Fabric. We used these slides a while back to kind of introduce a lot of our partners to blockchain in general, but also how transactions move and how privacy is available. So I know that there's always a need for explanatory slides, and so these are kind of appended to the very end of the deck itself, but we can definitely share this back out with the group if there's interest in those. Just, you know, it's a small resource, but it's definitely something we can share.
So I actually have a question, and it's around the participation. I remember you mentioned that some retailers chose to be anonymous. Just curious on how you handled that, and were there any implications in your pilot or in your proof of concept? Mm-hmm.
So generally what will happen with our partners is that they will elect to identify if the results are favorable for them. So, you know, it's understandable. In this case, there isn't necessarily going to be any findings that relate poorly to one particular company over another. The white paper that will be published at the end of the proof of concept will identify all the partners. Currently they've chosen not to identify, but by the end of this year, that paper will include the names of the organizations that are involved. There is a larger group, kind of a working group is what we, is the term that we're using for it, but a larger group of other suppliers, retailers, and solution providers that are supporting this project, as well as the broader data initiatives that we have active here at the lab. So I can also share a link to that there was a greater number of participants in that broader group that elected to identify. So if it would be helpful to know of those supporting organizations, and I can share a link to that as well. But I believe that Spanx and Under Armour and IBM and a few other organizations, AP Denison was one, that were engaged in this and you know, supporting the work that we're doing.
Yeah, I think in general, I mean, I like what you're doing. I think there's a lot to be gained here for the group. So maybe we could catch up every couple months just to see how progress is going and provide any updates, you know, for the rest of the group. Just have a
absolutely
quarterly touch base. And, you know, as you get updates, by all means, feel free to just email the group as you get updates, you know, the white paper, when the pilot's starting, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we really are, you know, the one of the primary factors for that influenced our involvement in Hyperledger in the first place was to connect with companies and to ultimately introduce them to, you know, the end users that we work with. So this really is an open opportunity for anyone that's interested, and we're definitely willing to share updates and keep everyone posted on how this whole thing progresses.
Great. Any other questions from any other folks in the chat, in the group? All right. So just to recap here. So Alan, when we're done with the presentation, I'm going to take the recording. I'll post it on the actual wiki. And I'll also post the slides. I have the slides you sent me. I don't know if you've made any changes, but I can post any updates if you haven't. Just send them to me.
Will do.
All right. Outside of that, anybody else have any questions, general questions, any updates? So we're still scheduling some other presentations for future meetings. We have one lined up for the next call, which I believe is, yep, it's before
the calendar. It's the 17th. We'll have the president from BETA, from Blockchain and Transportation Alliance, tell us about their standards and how they're doing their reference framework.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Joshua. All right. Thanks, everyone. Oh, I think we have somebody in the chat here that asked somebody.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Ben. All right.
Awesome presentation.
Yeah. Nice job. Thank you.
Thanks again, Alan. Take care.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Margo. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.